Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting, but not video streaming at this moment from our studios in New York City. And we welcome all of you all over the world. Today, it is TalkBack, your opportunity to share your thoughts and questions and comments and insights. I'll go to the calls in about 10 minutes. But before you call in, I have a lot to share on health and healing, including what we can do to the brain to allow it to function better. Also, all of the different ways that vitamin D can help us, something special about blueberries. And then I'll, from our environmental segment, I'll give you the latest on the extreme energy sources being tapped to fuel the post-peak oil economy. And it's not good, but it's important you hear it. I'll be sharing information from Art Voice from Michael Neiman. Let's begin. First up, I'm a beekeeper. I'm a certified organic farmer, and I've always had bees my entire adult life for a simple reason. Bees help with pollination. And you never heard of colony collapse 20, 30 years ago. Colony collapse is something new. It's a combination of the stress that bees are under from genetically modified seeds, plants, the herbicides, the electromagnetic pulses, all of these, plus the long distances many bees have to travel. They'll go to one part of the country in one season and be shipped off to another part just so they can pollinate the crops. Well, they've been dying. About half of all American bee colonies are dead. You don't, however, see that same phenomena in the organic bees. So for those of you who are going to do homesteading, definitely get yourself some bees, but read up on it. Educate yourself so you don't get the wrong bees. Now, what is it about the bees that can help us live a longer life? Well, first we've got the honey, including the raw, unheated honey, that is one of the most perfect ways of helping a wound heal, helping keep infections at bay, putting in a teaspoon of raw organic honey. Manuka is your best, but there are other ones that are very good as well. And let's say a green tea, and put that in if you have strep throat, staph, if you have a bad infection of some kind. But new research, just published in the Experimental Gerontology Journal, with teams of scientists from Arizona State University and Norwegian University of Life Sciences, found that bees can reverse brain aging and may hold the clues for Alzheimer's. Here's what they found. They found that when they showed that tricking older foraging bees into doing social tasks inside the nest causes changes in the molecular structure of their brains. Quote, "We knew from previous research that when bees stay in the nest and take care of larvae," the bee babies, by the way, "they remain mentally competent for as long as we observe them. However, after a period of nursing, bees fly out gathering food and begin aging very quickly. After just 2 weeks, foraging bees have worn their wings, have hairless bodies, and more importantly, lose brain function. Basically, measured as the ability to learn new things. We wanted to find out if there was plasticity in this aging pattern, so we asked the question, what would happen if we asked the foraging bees to take care of larval babies again? Researchers discovered that after 10 days, about 50% of the older bees caring for the nest and larvae had significantly improved their ability to learn new things. Quote, maybe social interventions, changing how you deal with your surroundings, is something we can do today to help our brains stay younger. Since the proteins being researched in people are the same proteins bees have, these proteins may be able to spontaneously respond to specific social experiences, end quote. I thought about this, and I thought, that's true for almost all creatures. For example, if you put a pig in a confined area, it will become depressed. It'll start biting its tail. It will overeat. It will not exercise. It'll become aggressive. If you have that same pig given plenty of room to roam and root, it does not. The behavior is completely different. And the same is true with primates. Now, because I'm very knowledgeable about primates, I raised and taught the chimpanzee Kokomo Jr. How to respond, along with Nick Corrado, his original owner, or her owner. It was Kokomo was actually a little female. Over 160 different commands, and I saw the difference when attention was being paid and it wasn't. And the patterns that a person goes through and a chimp goes through are very similar. That's why ever since I started taking in orphaned animals, which I've done my entire life. Oh, you have no idea. Down in Texas, when I had my first ranch, which was Healing Springs Ranch in Tioga, Texas, there was not a week that went by in years that some animal generally showed up there. Sometimes the people would bring it. Sometimes they'd just put it on the property, and we'd find it in the morning. Something that had been abused or neglected or malnourished or diseased or old, and they didn't want to take care of it. They didn't want to go to the cost of rendering an animal. That's what they do when a big horse or cow dies. And what I would do is I would put together protocols that would help the animals get back their health. In the vast majority of cases, not only getting back their health, but those that have been abused, being able to get back some joy in their life and be able to trust humans again. And with the primates in particular, it was important if I could get them younger, because then I would give the same attention to them that you would give to a baby, as I gave to my own daughter. Lots of attention. People don't realize that when I was writing my best-selling books, I was also taking care of my daughter, Shelley. And nothing in that day was more important than her time. She was always given the time. And as a result, I worked my schedule around that. So when she was sleeping at night, that's when I would go out and do a lot of my research and my writing. But it's that bonding time. I cannot emphasize enough the importance of bonding in people. Now, different people bond in different ways. Guys bond different than you would bond with a woman, for example. But with primates, they're almost identical to humans, absolutely identical. You have to change their diapers about 8-10 times a day. You have to bottle feed them their special formula, and I created a special formula, the very same one I use, but for them, to help them get their immune system strong and to grow. The quality time with them, so when they look at you, they know that you're like their mother and they feel safe and comfortable with you. Then when they start growing, they grow through stages. By the time a primate hits 2, and some primates won't utter a word for 2 years, and then suddenly they don't stop talking. And they act like a human going through the terrible 2s. They're bouncing off the walls. And they go through the real rough and tumble period. And then at the age of 6 or 7, when they're sexually mature, they can become extremely aggressive. And that's why most people don't know a lot about them, because they can't handle them. I mean, they can just tear you to pieces if you don't know what you're doing. In which case, then, you cannot have them for breeding, because if you have a male that's not castrated, and it can go after you in a heartbeat because it's going to be protecting the female. So all these things you learn. You learn that when one of the baby primates went missing, everybody was freaking out. Where is she? I said, don't worry. She's not going to go far. Why not? Why not? I said, see that teddy bear? She won't go further than what she can see, that teddy bear. Well, sure enough, 8 hours later, when no one could figure out where she was back in her enclosure with the teddy bear. She'd been underneath of it. And then she came back up. And they love to explore and they love to get out. They have to be very creative. That's why you have to constantly challenge them in their environment. So they don't start overeating and get depressed, because they'll get depressed just like human. You have to bond with them. You have to say their name. You have to have physical contact, touching their face. They have to look at you. They have to see. They'll read your energy. All this goes on. Now then imagine what we don't understand. Horses are the same way. They read your energy. They sense your energy. Animals will pick up on your energy, your cat, your dog, your bird, and know whether you're in a good mood or not, whether, you know, you're approachable or not. Now just imagine what would be different if people took quality time for each other. The bonding time, the friendship time, sharing things together that you both appreciate. It re-solidifies that energy. What Bruce Lipton, who I just filmed 4 weeks ago in California, said is the epigenetic connection. And that epigenetic connection means you can be completely vulnerable with someone and they'll never take advantage of it and use it against you. That's good. That's the way it should be. But in our society, frequently people will take advantage of anything that you share with them, anything you say. They'll use it against you at some point or take it out of context and throw it back. And that's why a lot of people, especially people who've been in toxic relationships, find it very difficult to open up again because they've been hurt. Someone asked them to share their most inner, intimate feelings and thoughts, and someone did, and then next thing you know, when someone gets angry, they bring all that up and use it against you. You do that too many times, then people are just going to intentionally keep a whole lot of their own thoughts to themselves. They're afraid. Now you come to the B. But wouldn't it be nice if we had relationships where you just simply looked at what it was someone shared with you? It's really basic. It's very simple. You don't need to go through analysis or therapy for this. Either someone is consistently good and kind and thoughtful and creative and caring, or they're not. If they're not, it's not important why they're not. Oh, gee whiz. You mean your father screamed at you when you were a kid, so now you scream at all the men in your life, and you think that's all right? You're just acting out and being your father as an adult? Well, it's not all right. And then we have to accept that there's a certain point where we've got to stop working on relationships. I just think we have a morbid fascination with enmeshing ourselves in endless discussions that do nothing. Relationships should be simple. You're either nice or you're not. How about that? You're either kind or you're not. You're selfless or you're selfish. You're either loving or you're not. You can't be loving and do something that's toxic. But we like to think, oh yeah, well, yesterday I was loving, but today I'm mean-spirited. No, then you're mean-spirited, and what you try to get away with was not really loving. When people are coming from love, you'll never see the backhand of their temperament hitting you in the psyche. They don't raise that umbrella and allow all the dark side emotions to come flooding out on you. But what happens is, and this is a game people play in our society, if I get to know you and I get close enough to you, then I'll show you everything I am. And if you don't like it, you've already emotionally committed to it, so it'll be a long and torturous process. All that should stop. Here's what I think. I think that if you have got to work on a relationship, you're in the wrong relationship. How about that? And yet we have so many dysfunctional people. We have so many incomplete people. We have so many dark side energy people in our society that you better be very intuitive and you better be very careful. Because otherwise you're going to get caught up in the duality of someone reading you, giving you something, and expecting a whole lot more in return. And when it doesn't come, then they'll blame you for why they feel bad about themselves. If you're around that kind of person, I'd leave. I mean, I don't care who it is. Just, your life's too short. Walk away from it. This idea that, well, yeah, no, we suffer, we fight, we argue, but eventually we... Why? Why? Why fight and suffer? Well, you think you're Woody Allen, some schmuck that hasn't been funny in 40 years? Jesus, man. You don't need therapy. We don't need therapy. We shouldn't be spending our time trying to tell other people what's wrong with our relationships because we can't change our story and we've accepted other people's stories as if it's true without looking for the truth. A person tells you something and they do something. Well, they are what they do. So if you're honest, you'll show your honesty. But don't tell me you're honest and turn around and steal from me. Don't tell me you're kind and turn around and do something toxic. Then you're not kind. So the lesson is not for you to learn. Clearly, you're not going to listen. The lesson is for me, for you to learn. Learn someone else's lesson, and you've had to pay for it. Since when are we going to stop learning other people's lessons, learn our own lesson? Anyhow, that is just an extension of my thoughts on this, because I really see a difference in how creatures communicate and relate versus humans. So my thoughts on the bees are simple. Every creature that I've come into contact with, that I've worked with, and especially humans, they need challenging environments. What we do is we challenge ourselves with work we generally are not happy with, that's not our ideal, with relationships that wouldn't be our first pick, but were what we accepted, with places to live and things to do and patterns of behavior and rituals to get us through the day. And then one day we wake up and think, thank God I'm able to retire. Thank God I'm able to... And to do what? To sit around like they do out in Arizona around golf courses, and their whole day is predicated upon what iron they're going to shoot on which tee and how, what their score is, as if that's relevant to anything in life? We have probably half the American population just vegetating at any given time. And then you ask, why aren't they voting for third-party candidates? Why aren't they engaged in demonstrations? Why aren't they seeing the world the way it is instead of being told the way it is and accepting it when it's clearly not the way it is? Because they're not challenged. The more challenged someone is, and ideally challenging themselves, the more likely they are to be growing, the more vital they become. They're not vegetating. And especially when you hit 60 and you start thinking about your own mortality, and how many more years will you be alive? And what was the purpose of the first 60? What exactly did you achieve outside of going through the rituals of being the right citizen, the good citizen, as Thoreau would say? But were you a good person for yourself? Did you play by the rules only to find out that today the rules have changed? Your interests and your needs are not a part of them. What are you going to do now? Feel bad or change? If your nature is to look for change and to be excited by the possibility of doing things new, even starting from scratch, then there's a high probability that just like the bees, you'll reverse brain aging. And you'll keep growing. And you'll keep alive and thoughtful and vital and essential. Otherwise, exactly what are you doing except acting like you're one of those people in a prison marking off the days till you die on a wall? Everything's predicated upon predictable, comfortable behavior. Just like the frog. Put the frog in water, turn the heat up gradually, and it's not even aware it's boiling to death. And I just think that retirement, as we know it, and lack of intellectual activity, lack of active challenges, has made us prematurely old, and a lot of people are lonely. We don't have enough social contact, and I think that that has to change. I know it has to change. So, a lesson from the bees. Next up, researchers are recommending increase vitamin C to our daily allowance. This is from the Critical Review Food Science and Nature, and it says, Oregon State University's Linus Pauling Institute are suggesting the increased amount of dietary vitamin C from 90 milligrams, the current rate for men and 75 for women, to 200 milligrams. All right? Well, I think that's junk science. And shame on Oregon State University's Linus Pauling Institute. What do you... bunch of clowns out there? I knew Linus Pauling for many years. As a scientist, he would come to see the work I was doing, giving people 200,000 milligrams of vitamin C intravenous and helping them overcome AIDS-defining illnesses, advanced cancers, heart disease, immune dysfunction, etc. He took 20,000 milligrams a day. So you're telling me that the university's Linus Pauling Institute is suggesting 200 milligrams when he used 2,000 milligrams? He would never have suggested 200 milligrams. But it shows you how they're really playing it safe. And that's unfortunate. Exercise may be needed for dietary restriction benefits. This is from Cell Metabolism. At the Buck Institute for Research in Aging, they report the outcomes of experiments that suggest that it may be necessary to be physically active in order to derive maximum benefit from dietary restrictions. And significant restrictions in total calories and exercise is what gives you the greatest benefit. And I absolutely agree with that. When you're eating big salads, they're filling, but they're not caloric dense. When you're having an apple, some grapes, not calorie dense. Juice, not calorie dense, but filling and nutritious. Then you start looking at the refined carbohydrates, the saturated and trans fats. Lots of calories, very little nutritional benefit. So exercise and restricting calories to a living food diet, and you'll live a longer life. Also, higher doses of vitamin D are needed for fracture prevention. This is from the New England Journal of Medicine, and it's suggesting that while 800 units or more of the vitamin was associated with reduced fracture risk, lower doses did not appear to be effective. So they looked at 31,000 individuals, 65 and older, and gave one group vitamin D and another group a placebo. And they found that vitamin D, at 800 units or higher, there was a 30% lower adjusted risk of hip fractures. So that's important. Start taking your vitamin D. And finally, take vitamin D, which is a fat-soluble nutrient that does not absorb well on an empty stomach. Take it with a small meal. And in fact, you could also take it with your largest meal of the day. 57% increased serum blood vitamin D levels after 2 to 3 months when people took their vitamin D with a meal versus taking it on an empty stomach. And lower DHEA levels associated with higher risk of cardiovascular disease. The Endocrine Society's annual meeting gave a presentation on DHEA. That's a natural hormone that from which other hormones are created. And it says that if you have the higher levels, you have a lower risk of cardiovascular events, meaning heart attack or stroke. So that's important. Make sure you're getting your DHEA each day. I'm Gary Knoll. That's the latest on health nutrition. Now we're going to open up our lines at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I still want to get to our environmental segment, but I'll take calls first. Back in a moment with your calls. 888-874-4888.
One look at you, and it was plain to see you were my destiny.
With arms open wide, I threw away my pride. I sacrificed for you, dedicate my life to you. Now go where you lead,
on,
always there in time of need.
Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Let's take some calls now and see what's on your mind. Let's say hello to Richard in Fort Lauderdale. Hi, Richard.
Hi, how are you doing, Gary?
Great, thank you.
Good. I have a question about bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, testosterone therapy.
Yes.
I do that, and it's from everything I've read, it's good for you in a number of ways. For me, it gives me a good energy, It makes me feel, my muscles feel, you know, like I can do more. Libido, you know, it's, I guess we've done something there, although I'm not in a relationship. But the thing I'm worried about is prostate. About 10 days ago, about 3 weeks ago, for 10 days, I didn't have any. I was on a trip, and I noticed that my stream, you know, when I was urinating, was much better by after about 5 or 6 days. And so I was, everything I've read says that it doesn't cause cancer. It's a big prostate cancer, or cause prostate cancer to advance. But I don't know. I mean, it seems like my prostate was more swollen when I was on the therapy, and shrunk back when I didn't have my testosterone cream. Of course, when I got back, I'm back on it. I mean, I like it very much. So,
okay. Over. Well, let me try to address some of these issues. First, in any healthy individual, taking natural hormone replacement therapy, and generally those over 50, you should do a simple hormone profile, including your total testosterone and your free testosterone fractions. That way you'll know whether or not you're in balance or out of balance. Same way with your human growth hormone. Then you can also have your PSA measured. I'm not a great believer in the PSA being anything that's that accurate, but at least it can help keep this walnut-sized gland at the base of the bladder that encircles the urethra and the tube through which urine is voided, and that's where you also make your prosthetic fluid, which is the bulk of the male ejaculate, and that's what actually nourishes and transports the sperm. So if you want to do it right, then look at what helps the prostate to begin with, if the object is to have a healthy prostate. So I would look at coenzyme Q10 and coenzyme A taken together, because they work synergistically. Coenzyme Q10 supports your immune system and helps the body detoxify along with coenzyme A, but it also improves oxygen in the cell. And one of the hallmarks of aging is that our organs, the brain, the heart, for example, do not have the same number of functioning mitochondria. These are the little energy factories that began to die, and what is called mega channeling. They open up and the internal fluid comes out, and that's because of oxidative stress. So, for example, if you're taking Q10, L-carnitine, Q1, DMG, dimethylglycine, garlic, proteolytic enzymes, vitamin A, glutathione, and maitake mushrooms, and D3, and vitamin C, and the B complex, and vitamin E, and L-carnosine, and then taurine, you're enforcing a healthier prostate. Then if you take the black radish, milk thistle, and red clover, you're helping detoxify. Then echinacea, Padiarco, and Suma all are important for the immune system. And modified citrus pectin is also good. And then Pygium and Sol Palmetto are good. And resveratrol and turmeric are excellent. So then if you stay away from fried food, animal proteins, dairy products, GMOs, then there's no reason not to have a healthy functioning prostate. But then when you look at menopause and andropause, which is a male form of menopause, and you're looking at making sure that your hormones are in balance, then look at beta-1,3-D-glucan, which boosts the your bone marrow production and acts as a powerful stimulant for the immune system. You could also help all of your joints if you looked at the glucosamine complexes, and DHEA, what I've mentioned earlier in the program, because it helps your memory, it enhances your sex drive. And remember, DHEA is converted into testosterone and estrogens in the body, and then 7-keto-DHEA, which is a metabolite of DHEA that is not converted into sex hormones, if you have a concern about prostate cancer, and then your essential fatty acids, all of which help you. And then a quality non-GMO protein, and then silica is also good. And I would definitely look at aloe vera, Damiana. I would look at dandelion greens, nettle, and seaweed, and watercress. They're very important. Anise, black cohosh, fennel, raspberry, sage, unicorn. Those are all natural estrogen promoters, as is fermented soy. Gotocola and Dong Quai are very important as well for men and women, as well as St. John's wort. So get more raw food, get juicing, get off anything that like coffee or anything and sugar that could be stimulating imbalance in your hormone levels. All the best to you, Richard, from Fort Lauderdale. Thanks for calling in on the show. Now let's say hello to Mary from Brooklyn. Hi, Mary. Your turn.
Yeah, good evening. I'm just going to ask, can you recommend any, what's the best test to find out if you have a chemical imbalance in your body? What's the best way to find out that?
I would suggest that you speak with your holistic physician and ask them, because they're the ones who have to write you the prescription. If they write you the prescription, you'll go to any of the qualified blood labs. They'll draw blood on you. I had mine drawn just last week. Had a full profile of everything. Every virus, every bacteria, hormone levels, nutrient levels, and inflammatories like homocysteine, C-reactive protein, fibrinogen. They were all perfect, so I was very happy about that. Especially after all the work I've been doing and traveling I've been doing, my immune system is stressed. So any doctor, any holistic doctor, would be able to give you a complete chemical analysis. And they just fill it out, and depending upon your age and what your conditions are, they may test stronger for hormones or in other cases for viruses. So that's between you and your doctor, but that's easy to do. Thank you, Mary.
Okay, thank you.
Let's say hello to Eric from Pennsylvania. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Gary. Can you hear me?
Sure can.
All right, thank you. I remember you mentioned you're going to have a couple of new books coming out, so I was wondering if you could share. I think one of them was The Proper Vegan Lifestyle, and I don't know if you're going to talk about a lot on 100% raw or versus subtly, you know, a little bit of cooked and the juicing in there, because I was interested in finding out more on you know, how to incorporate the juicing part into your day, because, you know, it's best to drink the juice right after you make it versus, because everything pretty much oxidizes fast within, a couple hours, I read.
No, that's a myth. This is an urban legend.
Uh-huh.
Oh, the hydrogen is gone. No, it isn't. I have 11 books coming out over the next 2 years. The first of these will come out in the next 6 weeks. I have 9 films coming out, including the most important at the moment is on genetically modified organisms. That's why we're working literally 7 days a week, 20 hours a day in my office to get this done. I'm running out doing filming around the world, bringing it back the next day, just so that we have the latest of everything in here. Other films are coming, some on health and nutrition. Most are socially relevant issues. The book that you refer to about how to be a healthy vegetarian, it's done. I'm simply waiting for my publishing schedule to allow it to fit in. The film that goes with it, which I'll be premiering in the spring on the PBS stations, is already completed. I have so much work that's done and in the can and sitting on shelves that we kind of have to get things into the market now so people can watch the films and read the books and then go on to the next one. You can't just put it all in at once. I have tried and experimented with every kind of dietary approach, and I find that the completely raw food diet does not work for most people. Even when you have someone who is very sick and they have been on a raw food program, even under supervision, and they've done very well, I fully accept that. But then you don't see what happens to them later when they end up with various conditions and deficiencies. But when you're really toxic and you give up all the foods that you've been used to that have created your toxic reaction, that in itself is going to make you 50% better, my experience shows. Then when you start having the enormous amount of antioxidant or auric factors from your fruits and vegetables and your grains, which are alkalizing, like kamut, amaranth, and quinoa, if you have sprouts and sprouted foods, and 25% of your diet is lightly cooked, and the rest is raw, then that's a perfect, in my opinion, a perfect living food diet. It's 100% living food, meaning it supports a 9 or 10 on a scale that the highest quality energy and healing power of a food is either 9 or 10. Most people have a few 7s, but their average is below 5, which means that their body is never able to really reverse disease. So they're always in a losing position, and that's why we have a generation after generation that are dying quicker. And now the latest is that for a large part of the population, the life expectancy is coming down again instead of being longer. This is directly due to all the stressors and the poor diet and oxidative stress. So the living foods diet is the right approach. But you just look at all the people that are going to a place to detox. You're not finding them giving them any fried food and cooked food and animal proteins at those places. So they're going to get better. But you have to be able to have something that a person can sustain. And they have to be very knowledgeable to sustain it on raw. Hope that answers your question. Let's say hello to, and juicing is best done first thing in the morning, but you could take a day and juice and then put it in different amounts, containers, based upon how much you're going to drink in a day, and then freeze them. If you put some lemon juice, the juice of 2 lemons or 1 teaspoon of vitamin C, it will absolutely be as nutrient-packed when you thaw it overnight as it was when you made it. There'll be no loss of nutrients. And that way you don't have to constantly be juicing every time you want a fresh glass of juice. Juice 3 times a day. In the morning, good time to juice and take your antioxidants prior to working out. Then juice in mid-morning when you're feeling a little low because your blood sugar's down. Then juice again in mid-afternoon. That way you'll have a nice, stable balance in your blood sugar. Kevin from California. Hi, Kevin. Your turn.
Hello, Gary. How are you doing?
Doing great. Thank you.
I had a question. I know that you recommend 6 days of cardio for 45 minutes and then 3 days of strength training a week for 30 minutes. I was wondering what you think of peak 8 exercise where you bike or sprint as hard as you can on the hardest level for 30 seconds and then rest for a minute and a half, and then repeat that for 8 times. I've heard Dr. Mercola and Phil Campbell claim that although cardio is very good for you, peak intensity exercise burns way more fat than a 40-minute cardio, since it speeds up your metabolism considerably more, and it causes human growth hormone secretion a lot more, and it also strengthens the heart muscle in a way that the regular cardio doesn't. So do you think it's safe? Does it work? Can I do this instead of cardio?
I would not do it. Remember, what you can achieve with short burst is not the same as changing your metabolism. You're not going to bring your pulse down. And part of the object of doing a cardio-sustained effort is to bring your resting pulse down to protect your heart. And also, for any kind of training, if you want to sustain your energy, the cell remembers the length and the intensity of the exercise. So if you're working out for 45 minutes an hour, the body remembers that. And so if you need that energy, it'll be there. But if you're working out in short burst, there's no memory pattern to take you further if you need that. You're much better off spending quality time doing a good, longer workout. And then if you want to mix up your exercising, then you can do some sprinting. And I suggest sprinting a couple days a week. All right? All the best to you. John from New Jersey. Hi, John.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Good.
My question is, I was reading one of your older books. I believe it was Ultimate Anti-Aging, and you had mentioned something about using high levels of chlorophyll to stimulate hair growth. And I was wondering if that's still relevant, and
yes,
if there's also other things that you can do, excuse me, in addition to the chlorophyll to stimulate hair growth.
Getting rid of the heavy metals. Heavy metals, I find, will stimulate hair loss. So when you do natural chelation through your chlorophylls and vitamin C, both of which are natural chelators, that helps to give you healthier hair growth and also brings back and can stimulate natural hair color. And I would also suggest I would also suggest that you do extensive exercise. And also, try to keep the scalp clean. A lot of people, if you go in to get your hair done, you'll find that when they're massaging your hair, it's very soft. That's not doing you any good. You need to have a really deep agitation, vibration on the scalp to open up the pores to allow the sebum, the salts, the oils, the dead tissue to be removed. And then only use natural shampoos and conditioners, because almost everything else is going to cause a dryness, an irritation to the scalp. And that can also cause hair loss as well. Martin, we got you back, so you're back on the air, Martin. Your turn.
Hi, Gary.
Hi, speak up, please.
Thank you for taking my call, Gary. I'm 43 years old and suffer from daily migraines. After MRIs and MRAs, the neurologists, the doctors have no answers. Can being overweight be a cause of daily migraines? And I must have missed your migraine segment on TalkBack a couple of weeks ago. I was waiting for it, but what are some of these triggers, food triggers, that cause migraines? Would you please tell me, answer that?
Sure, be happy to. Well, first, when you're overweight, you're going to be toxic. This idea that somehow we can be overweight and be healthy is not humanly possible. One of the things that happens is when you're overweight, you're frequently going to create an imbalance in hormones in the body, including the thyroid and the pituitary hormone and melatonin hormone. When you have a migraine, what do you have? You have a severe throbbing headache, and sometimes it's accompanied by visual disturbances, and it can really be debilitating, and it can last for a long time, and tens of millions of Americans have it. I find that women are more likely to have migraines when they're going through menstruation and also when they're going through perimenopause. And I've seen people who've gone through all the research, the single photon emission, computerized tomography, which is called SPECT, scanning, indicates that the inflammation involved in migraines is most notable in the meninges. And these are the three members, the dura, the arachnoid, and the very inner layer membrane called the pia, PIA, which is separated from the other two by cerebrospinal fluid. And so what you have is you have some form of triggering mechanism, more often than not, due to inflammatory cytokines. So look at wine, dairy, fried food, refined carbohydrates, artificial sweeteners, caffeine as being the primary causes of inflammation. So just getting rid of those, which are frequently what people do, will make an enormous difference. Then start looking at calcium and magnesium in equal amounts, 1,000 milligrams of citrate, C-I-T-R-A-T-E, because that makes an enormous difference in the transmission of nerve impulses. Coenzyme Q10 increases blood flow to the brain, and that can help diminish migraines. Also, you want the maximum oxygen utilization in the brain, and dimethylglycine, about 100 milligrams four times a day, and trimethylglycine, 200 milligrams twice a day, can do that. Also, 5-HTP, hydroxytryptophan, increases the production of serotonin, a neurotransmitter that is involved in vessel regulation, and that can help. So these are some things, along with quercetin and vitamin C, that can make a difference. Mind you, there are cluster headaches, there's tension headaches, there's migraine headaches, and the severity of the pain with cluster is very severe. And I find that if you just go on an elimination diet, it'll make all the difference in the world. The most powerful herbs for helping migraines would be capsicum, chamomile, ginger, peppermint, rosemary, valerian, willow bark, and wormwood. And though you don't want wormwood if you're pregnant, I would also suggest feverfew, but not if you're pregnant. And they'll make a difference. Lots of water as well. All the best to you. Let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I have a very insightful question from one of your audience members. This guy says his girlfriend is in the media business, and she has been watching you and your audience grow very carefully over the last several years. And her comment to him was this. Usually when people are growing their audience, I mean, I'm clearly you're sharing information with us that we'll never hear anywhere else. And we know that. So she says your audience is growing almost exponentially, and yet you're not, you don't seem to be pushing to get on national television. You don't seem to want to do like a show like, say, Dr. Oz or something like that. She just finds it very curious that the audience is growing and growing, and yet you're not national. And she has never seen a phenomenon like this before. So what are your comments on that?
I'll answer philosophically. Are you familiar with Alexander Solzhenitsyn?
No.
Okay. He was a Russian dissident, a writer, a social activist, and he was punished and put into a gulag in Russia for a long time. And it was only after he got out and wrote about his stories that did we know the full extent of what was going on in these gulags. He said that when you've robbed a man of everything, he is no longer in your power. He is free again. And in my career, time and again, I've had people who I won't mention from major magazines and networks who approached me and wanted me to do writing for them. I remember when I was writing for Bob Guccione, I was in California, and I was at a friend's house that both Bob knew and another very famous publisher knew. And this other very famous publisher had a high-level employee say, look, why are you publishing with Bob? You know, we'll give you more money. And I said, I'm sorry, but Bob Guccione allows me complete freedom to do anything I want. I've done 58 cover stories. You wouldn't have done 58 cover stories. You've never done two cover stories with the same author. I've gone after the biggest corporations in America. You've never done that. I've been able to challenge governmental agencies that have the capacity to hurt you. He said, go ahead. So when you say you'll pay me more money, I'm not motivated by more money. And everyone that works for any major publisher will be rewarded at some level that allows them in their mind to justify making compromises. Once you make those compromises, you're no longer your own person. You're an extension of them. As a result, you self-censor, and you're no longer going to be as vital and as probing as you otherwise would be. So I can take on the topics, including the suppression of cancer therapy as alternative cancer therapies, which gave a whole spotlight on these. Lawrence Burton was on 60 Minutes. Stanislaw Brzezinski got on 2020 with Geraldo because of the series. Now, my rule with Bob was, Bob, I'll speak with you, but not your lawyers, not anyone else in your company. And he said, fine. So we'd sit for hours and go over what were the important social issues in the 1970s and 80s and 90s. That's what is lacking today. So if I were to sign up with a place to do documentaries, or to do a daily television show, or to do a national syndicated radio show, you can bet that they're going to be doing this. Gary, we're going to give you this amount of money to bring that humongous audience that you have over. But you realize that our sponsors are X, Y, and Z, and we'd appreciate if you didn't say anything that would be offensive to them. Now, once you start realizing how many advertisers there are and how the media is held captive to these advertisers, then how much room does that give me? Could I do my show I'm doing now on genetic engineering? No. Could I do it on the FDA, like the war on health? Absolutely not. How about the drugging of our children, where I go after psychiatry, the entire field, and all the pharmaceutical companies and the teachers? No, that would go up against the teachers' union. Can't do that. Well, then you start marking a check-off list of everything you can't do once you agree to be a part of their family and be rewarded and have a seat at their table. Then I no longer am a person. I'm an object to exploit. So my path has been to say, I appreciate your offer, but no thanks. I remember a guy pursuing me, even coming on the PBS set on Channel 13 and making an outrageous offer to me. It would have brought me $1 billion, literally. It brought Robert Atkins, who did take the deal. And he said, if you don't take it, Atkins, well, I said, fine, let Bob take it. He needs that money, obviously. I don't, because what you're telling me I'd have to give up, I'm not willing to give up. So I said goodbye to it. I said no. And I think that something should be said for the opportunities we turn down in life, that if we took the opportunities, they would have compromised our virtue and value in some way. And that's why I'm the one who does not take the agent's calls or the film distributor's calls. You go to any of the film festivals and watch how many of the distributors come over after I win Best Festival. And they're all making deals, and I say, no thanks. Why not? This is stupid. We'll open in New York. I say, I can open in New York. I've opened in every major theater in New York, packed it. Yeah, but we can get you on TV. Yeah, but they won't take my shows on TV unless I edit out all the stuff that makes them worth watching. Yeah, but they're going to give you $1 million. I don't care about the $1 million. I care about, I can show this over the internet. Well, who's going to watch the internet? Hello? Do you know how many people have visited Gary Nall TV to get information or to watch the War on Health? Try 18 million. That would make it the most watched program, watched documentary in history. Yet they were given to it free. Because nobody's going to give that kind of marketed product away for free. They give you something and you give them something in return. So that's why I have chosen not to go back. I was on ABC for years. I was on WR. I was their most successful program on Sunday in their history before after. The Arbitrons are there. We have records of all this on WMCA. But I also see what they expect from you. And now I don't need them. We have the Progressive Radio Network. And a lot of other like-minded souls have a place here where there's never any compromise on their principles, their integrity, the topics they take on, and the level of their scholarship in doing so. Hope that answers your question, man. We're out of time. I'm going to thank you all for taking your time to listen. I look forward to sharing more in the next program. Now we have Michael Rupert. who's going to be coming on right now. And let's go over and say hello to Michael and see what we can expect tonight.
Gary, that was great. I was sitting here cheering as you were talking about that last bit. I've turned down three television series since the documentary Collapse came out because I wouldn't wear the costume. It's just not worth it. And people who don't understand really need to understand that there was probably never a second to debate whether or not we'd sell out for either one of us. We know where the value is. Anyway, hey, listen, it's a hot and heavy night tonight. There are some big events happening in the world in China versus Japan and everybody versus Iran. But there's a lot of other good things happening tonight. This is the autumnal equinox. We're in the last quarter of the year. And doggone it, if it doesn't look to me like the Mayans were calling some shots pretty, right?
Will you touch on three topics? If you can, that would be really good. I'll be listening. One is that there are those who believe that it is almost inevitable that Iran will be attacked, that it's in Israel's interest to attack, and America, like it or not, would have to jump into this. What's the likely outcome? Secondly, there are those who don't believe that it matters whether or not China trades with Russia and for oil and uses its own currency. And I say it does matter, and you better pay attention, because once China and Russia are trading for oil and you've got India and Iran trading for gold, China and Iran trading for gold, Russia and Iran trading for gold, and China is now the number one producer of gold in the world, Canada is number two, and the United States is number three, then I believe that the U.S. currency could be looking to take a tumble in the next 2 years. Are you going to deal with any of this?
Not in such great specifics on the latter, but there are some major issues involved now, both with Iran, Russia, China, and all of those nations. And bear in mind that by treaty, the United States is obligated to enter either one of those wars. So there's a lot going on tonight.
We look forward to listening, Michael. Michael Rupert Show, coming up right now on the Progressive Radio Network. And I want to thank the people this week, 5,300 brand new listeners average every single day, more than any other radio station out there. And the average age is 35, college graduated women listening from home, meaning they're working the daytime, listening at night. We thank you through word of mouth. That's 1.5 million brand new listeners per year. And that doesn't even include all those who've been listening through Voice America and all the other land-based terrestrial stations all over the place. I'm Gary Nall. Have a nice day.
Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother,
like,
stop.
Right on.